You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast with me right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, I know it's been a couple of weeks, y'all. Don't be upset. Don't be too mad at me. I'll tell y'all a funny story before I get into our topics for this episode, man. I actually recorded the latest episode a couple weeks back. I had it recorded, but I was actually going out of town the next morning. So I spent all night recording this episode, right? It was about 40, 45 minutes. It was a good episode, actually. Had some good topics. And I woke up, actually, you know, uploading everything on my computer. But I said, you know what? I'm going to go to sleep because it was getting real late. I said, I'm going to upload it to the podcast station. I'll upload it to the actual profile in the morning before I get on the road. And guess what I did? I got on the road, forgot to post the podcast, so I did not have a show for that week. But it's all good, man. The show must go on. Like I said, I apologize, but hey, you know, sometimes you got to take that mental break. So I took that following week, so that's why I didn't have an episode as well for last week either. But again, thankful to be here. Thankful to be able to talk some sports with you guys, man. Man, let's get into things. So we know, you know, the NBA has officially tipped off. It tipped off this past Tuesday, and man, it's a lot of stuff going on already, man. It's only the second game of the season for teams, and you know, all the focus and everything has been around Ben Simmons and what's going on in Philadelphia with the 76ers. And quite frankly, I'm really tired of hearing about it, to be honest with you guys. That's not even in the topics, but I just wanted to add that, man. I honestly, real quick, I really don't understand what's going on with Ben Simmons. To be honest, I saw something that came out today where he said he finally met with his teammates and met with the coaching staff and the organization or whatever. And he said that, you know, he wanted to trade. He told Joel Embiid when he was asked why he wanted to trade that he could not live up to the expectations that they're wanting him to live up to. And so that's why he wants to be traded. And which is really ridiculous if you ask me. I really don't understand, because do you really think, Ben Simmons, that if you get traded somewhere, the level of expectation for you to elevate your game is just going to magically disappear? It's not. The fact of the matter is, you need to learn how to shoot the basketball. You need to get better at that. You do all the other things right. I mean, you play defense, you can facilitate, but you need to develop a jump shot. And that's not going to magically disappear if you get traded somewhere else. And now, you know, Daryl Morey came out and said that, you know what, this is going to be a long road unless they get somebody that's willing to give them the star caliber player plus some draft picks. Then they're not going to, you know, they'll trade them. But until then, they're not going to. But I honestly think that, you know, this is just they really need to cut ties. Ben Simmons already really hurt his trade value as it is, the way he's been acting like a child. So but hey, you know, it is what it is. But like I said, let me not get too far off topic. Let's get back on track. Again, like I said, man, NBA tipped off on Tuesday. We had two good games, which we'll get into in just a second. But first and foremost, man, I want to talk about my top five teams in the East and the West heading into the season. So I'll start with the East. So for me, my top five teams heading into the season from the East, I had the Bucks at one. I had the Nets at two. And obviously, we know that that's really kind of contingent upon if Kyrie ends up coming back and playing. But I still put them at number two still with KD and Harden. And then I have the Atlanta Hawks at the third spot. I have the Miami Heat. And then I have the Chicago Bulls at the fifth spot, my Chicago Bulls. Now, you know, looking at the Hawks, they're coming back with Trae Young. You know, obviously, we saw what he was able to do. Once they had that coaching change, man, and that team was able to really coincide on the court together, man, and they were really they were coexisting. They had everything working in their favor, and they made a huge playoff push. an NBA Finals run, excuse me. It came up just short against the Milwaukee Bucks, and I think that, you know, personally, if Trey didn't get hurt, man, they could have very well made the NBA Finals. And then you got the Miami Heat, you got, you know, Jimmy Butler, you got Victor Oladipo, you got Bam, you got Tyler Hero, you got a solid, gritty team in Miami that's returning, man, and it's going to be good to see Victor Oladipo back after suffering an injury last year and having to miss the remainder of the season for the Miami Heat. And then you got my Chicago Bulls, man, with the acquisitions that we made over the offseason, man, getting Lonzo Ball, getting Alex Caruso, you know, keeping Zach LaVine. They got Nurkic in there. You know, there's some talent around this team. You get DeRozan, you know, you got some shooters now. You got some perimeter players, and it's going to be an exciting team to watch this year. So I'm telling y'all, don't sleep on my Chicago Bulls. I keep saying this. We're going to make a serious run, man. So don't sleep. And then in the West, you know, I'm looking at the West right now. You know, I got the Lakers at one, looking at what they did in the offseason, you know, adding Russell Westbrook alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis. And then you throw a Dwight Howard in there. They get him back. You get Rondo back. So they actually recently went out and got Avery Bradley. So a nice defender to add onto their roster that they're going to need. So, you know, and then you get Carmelo Anthony. So you got Melo out there. Again, this is an older team. they are an old team. So this is going to be, their health is going to be critical, you know, going down the season. We know Anthony Davis can never stay healthy. You know, Russell Westbrook, he's really a deer in the headlights. So we'll talk about him actually in just a second when I recap the two games from Tuesday night. But a lot of questions are going to have to be answered with the Los Angeles Lakers ahead and, you know, throughout this year. So I will continue to pay attention to that. And then you got the Phoenix Suns. I got the Phoenix Suns at two, excuse me. I got the Utah Jazz at three, the Mavs at four, and then I got the Clippers at five. And you could kind of interchange the Clippers and the Nuggets, to be honest with you. But I do like the Clippers. I'll put them at five for right now. And we'll continue to, you know, follow this, and I'll do different rankings as the season goes on. And now just look at the actual NBA power rankings right now. They had a Nets at number one in the power rankings. But again, the biggest question is, will Kyrie Irving play this year? Now, they did go sign Patty Mills, so that was a interesting, you know, nice little solid player to add, you know, to provide some shooting. And then they got the Bucks at number two. With the Bucks, they did lose PJ Tucker, who was a perimeter defender, who played a huge role in frustrating KD last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. So, not the Eastern Conference Finals, but frustrated in the right before the Eastern Conference Finals, excuse me, the semis. So, and then you got the Lakers coming in at three. They, like I already mentioned, they signed Russell Westbrook, Melo, Dwight, Rondo, Avery Bradley, and they did lose Alex Caruso and Dennis Schroeder. I forgot to add that earlier. But again, like I said, can they stay healthy? And then you have the Suns at four. They did extend Chris Paul, so that was huge to be able to extend him. But, however, they did fail to extend DeAndre Ayton. So is that going to become a distraction? So that's something to watch, which I don't think it will. I think that, you know, obviously they made a great run in making it to the finals last year. They did fall short, but I think that they kept their core together, which is going to be very important for them going forward. And then they have the Jazz at the fifth spot in the power rankings. Now, they went out and they signed Rudy Gay, who's, you know, that's a solid pickup if you ask me. He was actually, you know, averaging 11-5 last year. You know, a guy at his age, you know, that's, he can still provide you some good minutes, and he has some good, you know, still can shoot some quality shots. So if you look at it, you know, the top two teams that are in the East, and then my top three teams that I actually put in the West, those are actually the top five in the power rankings for the NBA right now. So, again, we'll continue to pay attention to that. But let's talk about opening night, shall we? So the first game that we had was the Nets on the road in Milwaukee to face the Bucks. Now, the Bucks did win this game 127-104 in a blowout. Giannis had 32 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 blocks, and he shot 77% from the free throw line. Chris Middleton followed that up with 20 points and 9 rebounds. Connington, he had 20 points off the bench. Jordan Nwora, he had 15 points off the bench. Now, the Bucks shot 45% from the field, 38% from 3, and 78% from the line. And they out-rebounded the Brooklyn Nets 54-44. Their largest lead in this game was actually 23 points. So, you know, this thing, man, the Bucks really just ran away with this game. It wasn't close. You can see the difference without having Kyrie Irving out there and how much of an impact that's having on the Brooklyn Nets. So they're really hoping to get him back in that lineup so they can, you know, build a good chemistry together on the court. Because last year we didn't really see them play together a lot at all. I believe it was only about 10 or 11 games where they actually, if even that, where they all three were on the court at the same time. And looking at what the Nets did, you know, Kevin Durant, he had 32, 11, and 4. Nice, solid game for him. James Harden, he had 20 points, 8 rebounds. Patty Mills, who they just acquired, he had 21 points off the bench. So that's going back to what I was talking about earlier, where he could provide some good quality shooting for you. So if he's able to give you 15, 20 off the bench, that's huge. And then, you know, the Nets is a team that shot 44% from the field, 53% from three. However, here's the key thing for them. They had 13 turnovers in this game that actually led to 22 points for the Bucks. So they're going to have to clean that up, and they're going to have to do better with protecting the basketball. And not, you know, giving up points, letting teams get out in transition and giving up, you know, fast break points as well. So looking at our second game for Tuesday night, the Warriors went on the road to face the Los Angeles Lakers. And the Warriors actually got the win in this game, 121-114. Steph Curry actually had a pretty quiet night. He did end up having 21 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. So he did finish with a triple-double, but it was a quiet triple-double if you watch the game. He did struggle from shooting the three early on in that game. Now he did come back in the second game that they just had. He dropped 47 points. Curry went crazy in their second game. But again, Jordan Poole followed that up. He had 20 points. Andrew Wiggins, 12.7 rebounds. Nemanja Bjelica had 15 points and 11 rebounds off the bench. So that was huge for the Warriors in this game. And then you have Damian Lee following that up with 15 points off the bench. Iguodala, 12 points off the bench. So the Warriors shot 44% from the field, 36% from three, 83% from the line, and they out-rebounded the Los Angeles Lakers 50-45. The bench outscored the Lakers bench 55-29. Now, let's think about this now. They had no Klay Thompson, no James Wiseman. There's no reason why they should have been able to out-rebound, you know, the Lakers in this game. But they did. And the biggest difference in the game was, like I said, that bench. The Warriors had a deeper bench than the Lakers did, and they were able to outscore them 55-29. So that's huge. You know, that is huge to be able to do that. So that's going to be something to watch for the Lakers, you know, going throughout the season. You know, how well is this bench gonna play? So let's look at what the Lakers did. LeBron had 34 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. So that was solid, nice, solid performance for LeBron. Anthony Davis followed that up with 33 points, 11 rebounds. So another solid performance by Anthony Davis to start off the season. Carmelo, you know, he had 9 points. He had a quiet night. Now, let's get to Russell Westbrook, okay? Russell Westbrook went 4 of 13 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3, and he only had 8 points. So this is what I'm talking about, people. It all looks good on paper. And like I said, I'm not overreacting. It's only the first game. I get all of that. But what I've been trying to explain to people, you know, in regards to Russell Westbrook, Russ can light it up some nights. But some nights when he's off, he's off. Like, he's really, really off. So they're going to have to find a nice middle ground, you know, where they can make this work. You know, it's just one of those things where they can't expect to be successful when you're going to have nights like that. You know, we all know that Russell Westbrook is not a 3-point shooter. He can knock it down occasionally. He's not really that much of a shooter. Now, he like I said, he can knock them down, but his game is best when he's attacking the glass, when he's getting in the paint. That's when he creates the most stress on defenders, when he gets penetration and he can drive, he can kick, he can go create other opportunity for his teammates. He can get to the free throw line. That's his bread and butter right there. Not shooting and settling for jump shots, you know, and to go 4 of 13 from the field, that's not going to cut it. Now the Lakers, they shot 47% from the field, 36% from three, and they had 18 turnovers in this game that led to 20 points for the Warriors. So again, they also need to, like I said about the Brooklyn Nets, they need to be able to protect the basketball. Giving up 20 points off of turnovers, that's not going to get it done. You know, that's just not going to cut it. Point blank, period. Now, Frank Vogel, he was outcoached in this game, and his rotations and his lineups, they were questionable. I mean, if you look at the game, I mean, some of the lineups that he's put together, and this has been something that we questioned even last year. You know, what the rotations and things that he's doing, they're not, it's just not making any sense at certain critical points in the game. And now the Lakers' health and their bench, like I said already, is going to be a huge question mark this year. And also Russell Westbrook's ability to adapt to, you know, being in Los Angeles. This is a team he's, you know, he's wanted to play for, obviously going back to L.A. and everything like that. So, you know, these are things that we're going to have to watch closely. So let's keep it in the NBA right now. Let's talk about who I think is the best point guard coming into the NBA season real quick. So if you ask me, if I had to pick a point guard, I'm going to go with Trae Young, you know, hometown Atlanta Hawks here. I'm going to go with Trae Young as my favorite, you know, my best point guard coming into this year. You know, this is year three for him. Last year, he averaged 25 points a game and 9 assists. Now, his average of 9 assists per game was actually second in the NBA. He shot 44% from the field, 34% from three. But I think that he has a really good chance, and I think that he's actually going to improve those numbers this season. Trae Young, you know, like I already mentioned before, he has the ability to make his teammates better, and he can create, you know, those open shots for his teammates. So I think that he's clearly the most important player on the team. And I think that, you know, we'll see, you know, how things continue to just elevate for him this year. And I think that this is the year, you know, he takes his game to an even higher level. And I think that he is not, you know, his ceiling is even higher. So I think that we're going to see a lot of great basketball from Trae Young this year. And obviously, I already mentioned before, with that injury, you know, that he suffered in the Eastern Conference Finals, man, I think that if it wasn't for that, man, I really, really think that the Hawks could have gone, you know, to the finals for sure. I'm not, you know, saying 100%, but I think that they could have closed out the books. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I'm not a shoulda, coulda, woulda type of person. You know, it is what it is. It happened, but this is a new year. And I like Trae as my best point guard coming into the year. And can't forget about Ja Morant. You know, Ja Morant is another guy who I really, really like with his explosiveness and his ability to get his teammates opportunities and his ability to attack the paint. And he finishes with especially when he dunks, man, he finishes with such like intensity, man. It's really exciting to see him on the court each and every time we get a chance to watch Grizzlies games. But yeah, man, we'll continue to watch it, man. And this is no disrespect to any other point guard. This is just my opinion, and that's what it's about. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has their own opinion. You know, that's what it's all about, man. Whoever is your person, man, and that's your guy, that's your guy. I'm rocking with Trae Young, aka Ice Trae. So let's move on, man. Let's talk some college football right now, man. So let's run down the latest college football rankings. Again, like I always do, if you don't know by now, I'm going to go through the top 10. I'm not going to do the top 25, but I'm just going to run through the top 10, give you my thoughts, and then talk about, you know, answer is the SEC still the best conference? And let's also talk about what I expect to see when the official rankings are released in the next few weeks. So, again, so let's look at the top 10 right now. So right now, currently the college football rankings, we have Georgia at number one. They're actually on a bye this week. You have Cincinnati at number two. They travel to face Navy this week. And you have Oklahoma at number three. They travel to face Kansas. Bama is at number four. They host Tennessee this week. Ohio State is number five. They travel to play at Indiana. Michigan is at number six. They host Northwestern. Penn State, number seven. They host Illinois. Oklahoma is number eight. They travel on the road to face Iowa State. Michigan State is number nine. They're actually on a bye this weekend. And Oregon is at number 10, and they travel to face UCLA. So currently right now, the Big Ten has four teams in the top 10. The SEC has two teams. The Big 12 has two teams. The Pac-12 has one team. And the American Conference has one team. So the SEC and the Big Ten actually have six teams in the top 25 currently. But for me, in my personal opinion, man, I still think the SEC is the best conference. I get that Big Ten has the more teams in the top 10, and that's really primarily because, you know, obviously some teams lost. They kind of skated up in there. But I don't for one second think that, you know, the Big Ten is deeper than the SEC. I think the SEC is definitely deeper than the Big Ten. And if you match up these teams that are in the top four with the teams in the SEC, man, I still think the SEC will win hands down. So maybe not every single team, but the SEC has more teams that can knock off the Big Ten for sure. Now, like I said before, man, the official rankings. And before I get to that, man, you know, obviously it's still UGA. I mean, UGA and Bama, man. Those that is the SEC right now. But, you know, you got teams like Ole Miss. You got, you know, Texas A&M. You got teams like that Florida, Kentucky. These are tough teams, you know. And they're not easy games to win. But we'll continue to watch that. And UGA actually next, they're on a bye this week, but they do face Florida in Jacksonville next week. And so we'll talk about that when the time comes. But getting back on topic, man, so the official rankings, like I said, they're going to be released on November the 2nd. So I didn't give you guys a date, so I'm sorry. So November the 2nd earlier when I said it. So the committee is going to release these rankings each week on ESPN. So after November the 2nd, it'll be, I want to say every Tuesday. After that, they're going to release their rankings all the way up until the college football playoff. So one thing that I expect to see once the rankings are put out, I expect to see Cincinnati ranked a little lower. I don't think that they're the number two team in the nation. No way I believe that. At all. I get that they went on the road and they beat a Notre Dame team. I want to say it was the number 14 Notre Dame, but they're not better than Oklahoma. They're not better than Alabama. They're not better than Ohio State. Now, I'm not saying put Alabama up at number two. I get they have one loss, but, you know, clearly Cincinnati's not better than these teams. I get they're undefeated, so for the sake of them being undefeated, the committee might leave them up there, but at the very least, man, I expect them to at least, you know, drop down to three, maybe. You know, I really don't even want Oklahoma up there at number two because I don't believe Oklahoma's number two at all the way they've been skating by. So I guess, you know, they're obviously, I'm not going to say I expect Cincinnati to be lower, but I would like to see Cincinnati be lower. But with, you know, all the talks about them expanding the college football playoff, it actually really brings even more excitement if they leave Cincinnati at number two. So I get it if they do, but there's no way Cincinnati's the second best team in the country. Like, there's no way. And you can't look me in my face with a clear face and tell me that. But hey, we'll see what happens. And as they release those rankings, man, we'll dissect them each and every week, man, when the time comes. And I'll just be excited to kind of just navigate through it with you guys, man, and see what you know, go through some different scenarios leading up into the playoff. So let's continue to move on here, man, and let's talk NFL right now. So who is the best quarterback in the NFL right now? Man, You know, obviously this can go, you know, a few different ways. But if you ask me, man, the person who I think, the quarterback who I think is the best in the NFL right now, man, I'm going with my guy, Lamar Jackson, man. I think Lamar Jackson right now, I think he's the hottest, you know, one of the hottest quarterback in the NFL right now. You know, and this is obviously alongside guys like Kyler Murray and Dak Prescott too, you know. So I know, you know, you got, you know, Tom Brady's doing his thing, and Rodgers is starting to do his thing and get better and better each week with the Packers. But for me, man, I'm going with Lamar Jackson. Call me crazy, but let's take a look at the facts here. He's leading the Baltimore Ravens to a 5-1 record, which is best in the AFC right now. Lamar is ranked number 6 in passing, with a little over 1,600 yards, and number 7 in rushing with 392 yards. He actually set the NFL record for most wins under the age of 25, and that's 35 wins that he has right now under the age of 25. He actually overcame the largest deficit of his career on Monday Night Football when they hosted the Indianapolis Colts. They were down 19 points. That's the largest deficit of his career. He was able to wheel his team back, lead them to overtime, and drive him down the field, and they got the win. And in that same game, he actually set the NFL record for completion percentage, which was 86%, in both a 400-yard passing game and a 40-attempt passing game. So like I said, man, I think Lamar, you know, right now, man, he's rolling. You know, he has everybody buying into him, man. And I think that, you know, and that's from, you know, coaching, players, like, all of that, man. The entire city of Baltimore, man, they're rallying around Lamar Jackson. So that's my guy who I feel like is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. Let's keep it in the NFL right now, man, and let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks. So question is right now, man, there's been some you know, stuff circulating around Seattle right now. They've actually reached out to Cam Newton. So the question here is, with Russell Wilson on IR, the Seahawks have been in talk with him. So with Cam Newton. So would this be a good fit? Would Cam Newton be a good fit for the Seattle Seahawks? So let's talk here, man. So Cam Newton is actually now fully vaccinated. You know, last month or so, once he was released by, you know, the New England Patriots, they said it didn't have anything to do with his, you know, vaccination status, which I do still think that that has something to play into it. Because I refuse to believe that that didn't have any impact on their decision to release Cam. And then, you know, obviously we saw Cam go, you know, come out on YouTube where he was sitting at my alma mater, at our alma maters, our high school alma mater, man, in midfield at Westlake High School, man. Shout out to the Lions. They're doing their thing in football right now. You know, he sat there with his dad, and they were kind of, you know, going through the situation and talking about it and everything. You know, they kind of got towards the vaccination and he really didn't talk much about it. We all know that he wasn't vaccinated. He recently released a video saying that he did get the shot and showed himself getting the vaccination. So if you ask me, man, I think that, you know, with him obviously coming out and saying, you know, this isn't the end of Cam Newton, he still wants to play, I personally think that this would be a really good fit for Seattle. I think that, you know, obviously he had a rough year last year and he didn't really have a lot of weapons. And they didn't really have that much of, they really didn't have an offseason for real at all. But I think he showed really good signs in preseason with the additions on offense that the Pats were able to add. So I think that, you know, he was showing some good signs. So I think he could have a lot of success with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and Will Disley at tight end. And I know Chris Carson is on IR. And him and Russell Wilson both can't return until week 10. But they do have a solid running back in Alex Collins, who did put on a nice performance against the Steelers when they were on the road. He actually put up 101 yards and a touchdown. So, you know, I think it would be a really good fit. You know, I think that could work for sure. Because honestly, Geno Smith, Geno's not it. Okay, Geno is not going to get it done. I'm sorry. Geno, he's solid, but that's not going to get it done. that's just a fact. Now, the Seahawks have claimed Jacob Eason off waivers from the Indianapolis Colts. In the talks that have been happening with Cam Newton, there has not been anything that has surfaced from that. But I do expect them to continue to talk, and I expect them to get Cam Newton in there to work out, and then I do expect them to potentially sign him, you know, for sure. And you know, there's other teams that could use Cam too. I mean, let's look at Cleveland. You know, they're riding with Case Keenum right now with you know, with Baker Mayfield's shoulder and everything. He has a couple of different injuries going on right now. So look at Cleveland. You know, you see that situation right there. So, but I think that Seattle would be a really, really good fit for him. So we'll continue to watch it and we'll see what happens from there. And last but not least, man, let's talk about the Atlanta Braves, man. So the Atlanta Braves are currently leading the Los Angeles Dodgers 3-2 in the NLCS. Now, the question here, man, is what do they have to do to close this thing out in advance to their first World Series since 1995? So let's talk, man. Let's talk about this NLCS. So let's just dissect this thing, man. And we'll continue. You know, I'll recap what we had going on so far and then get us, you know, right up to speed. So coming into this NLCS, man, let's look at how the Braves and the Dodgers matched up together. So the Dodgers are top five in batting average with .233. They're actually number five. And the Braves are number four with .237 batting average. The Braves are number two in pitching. The Dodgers are tied for third. The Dodgers are third in home runs. The Braves are fifth. The Braves are number one in earned run average with .204. And the Dodgers are second. The Dodgers are third in RBIs. The Braves are fourth. The Dodgers are third in hits. The Braves are fourth. The Dodgers are number one in strikeouts. Excuse me. The Braves are number four in strikeouts. The Dodgers are number one in stolen bases, but the Braves are not in the top five in that. Now, both of these teams, as you just heard what I said, both of these teams are evenly matched. I mean, they are neck and neck right there with one another, aside from the stolen bases. These guys are evenly matched. So let's just, knowing what we know, let's look at, you know, what's going on right now. So the Braves, like I already said, they currently lead the series 3-2. They did lose game five recently, 11-2. So they got blown out in game five. But they do have a chance to close this thing out against the Dodgers and head to the World Series on Saturday. Now, the game is here in Atlanta. It starts at 5:08 p.m. And hey, man, it's go time. So game six will be here. And if necessary, game seven will be here in Atlanta again. So how did we get here? Okay, let's talk about each game. So game one, the Braves were down 2-1 at the bottom of the fourth when Austin Riley homered to tie the game up. Austin Riley then singled to left in the bottom of the ninth. Albies scored to give the Braves the 3-2 walk-off win. So game two, the Braves were down 4-2 in the bottom of the eighth. Albies singled and Rosario scored to make it 4-3. Austin Riley then doubled and Albies scored to make it 4-4. Now, Rosario singled in the bottom of the ninth. Swanson scored, and this gave the Braves the 5-4 walk-off win. So that was two walk-off wins in a row for the Atlanta Braves to kick off the series and put them up 2-0, which was exciting, man. And then the game three, man, when we transitioned to Los Angeles, so the Braves were actually up 5-2 at the bottom of the eighth. So they were just knocking on the door, man, to go up 3-0. But Cody Bellinger came alive, and he hit a 3-run homer to tie the game up. Mookie Betts then doubled right after that and gave the Dodgers a 6-5 lead. The Dodgers went on to hold on to that lead, and they won the game. So the Braves were this close from being able to go up 3-0, man. I wish they would have done it, but it's okay. That pitching selection, man, when Cody hit that home run, it just wasn't the best. And he knew when he hit it, it was gone. And then in game four, man, so this game was all Braves, man. They were up 5-0 at the top of the fifth. At the top of the ninth, Freddie Freeman doubled. Swanson scored to give the Braves a 6-2 lead. And then Rosario hit a 3-run home run. Braves were able to hold on to win this game 9-2. And then recently in game five, this one was all Dodgers. Freddie Freeman actually hit a 2-run home run in the top of the first to give the Braves the early 2-0 lead. But that was all from there. Chris Taylor man, had a game, a night of his life for the Dodgers. He hit 3 home runs in this game. His first was a 2-run homer in the bottom of the second. His second was a 2-run homer in the bottom of the fifth. And his third was a single-run home run in the bottom of the seventh. And the Dodgers went on to win this one 11-2. So the question, the big question, how did the Braves close this thing out, man? How did they do it? So for me, this is what, I'm going to give you a few points here. So for me, the X factors for the Braves are going to be Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley, and Eddie Rosario. I think they'll all need to have solid performances in Game 6 if they want to go on and win this game. And you look at Austin Riley, he's 8th in RBIs, and Ozzie Albies is actually 9th. So the Braves must capitalize on opportunities with runners in scoring position. So we saw even on the road against the Dodgers, there were certain situations in the games where they left runners on the bases. They can't do that. They can't allow the Dodgers to stick around and, you know, hang close. They need to get these runners in scoring position and get them home and put up some points. I also think that, you know, the Braves pitching, it has to be better. It has to be on point. Max Fried in Game 5, he allowed 8 hits, 2 walks, and 5 runs in just 4 2/3 innings. You know, that can't happen again. You know, the Braves, they gave up 17 total hits in Game 5. That's just inexcusable. And, you know, I was wondering, you know, looking at the game, I was like, man, when they start, you know, they were killing Max Fried's pitches. And I was like, man, they got to take him out eventually. I mean, it's time to take him out. And they just let him stand there. And they were steady teeing off on every pitch. I'm like, I mean, first, some of them were just they were swinging at the first pitch. And it's just like, man, I know they wanted to leave him in there and let him get himself out of it. But, you know, it was just really bad. Pitching was just really bad. So they have to be better. And now, in game six here in Atlanta, Matt Scherzer, the right-hander, is actually going to be taking him out for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has a 15-4 record. And for the Atlanta Braves, Ian Henderson, the right-hander, he's going to be taking him out for the Braves. He actually has a 9-5 record. So my prediction right now, man, put it on the books, man. The Atlanta Braves are going to win game 6 here in Atlanta. And they're going to head to the World Series for their first World Series appearance since 1995. Chop on. Let's get it, Braves. 4-A. You know, let's do it, man. I'm excited. You know, everybody. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm from Chicago. But I also root for the Braves, man. And I think that, you know, this is their time. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen with them. And then we'll also pay attention to what's going on with the Houston Astros and the Red Sox in that series. Because they're actually still going on right now as well. The Houston Astros actually lead that series 3-2. So they're actually playing. Actually, as I'm talking right now. So they're looking to go to a World Series again as well. So, you know, hey, not again because they didn't go last year, but they're looking to go to the World Series. I don't think, you know, the Astros didn't go to the World Series last year. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't believe they did. No, I don't think, no. I don't believe they went to the World Series last year. If I did, if I'm wrong, then I apologize. But nevertheless, we're paying attention to it. I think it's going to end up being the Astros and the Braves. So, hey, man, we'll have a good old-fashioned Houston-Atlanta matchup, man. So, hey, go Braves. Do y'all thing, man. And I'll be back to talk about it next week, man, when it's time. But, hey, man, that was all I had for you guys, man. I appreciate, again, you guys giving me some time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always, man. And keep rocking with me. I'll continue to give y'all some updates, man. We'll talk some good sports talk, man, like we always do. Hey, I appreciate all the support. Peace, love, and as always, man, Roll Tide. I'm out of here.